The next case is 03-1868, John R. Schuler versus U.S. Steel Corporation. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Thomas Wilson. I'm here on behalf of plaintiff appellant John Schuler. At this time, I would request 5 minutes of rebuttal time be reserved.
Watch your time here.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, we're here this morning on a certified conflict question. The certified conflict question arises out of the decision by the 11th District Court of Appeals in the case captioned John Schuler versus U.S. Steel, which was determined to be in conflict with two other courts of appeal, the 8th District Court of Appeal in Dixon versus Ford, and the First District Court of Appeal. The single issue before the court, which has been certified, is whether an expert witness fee for live in-court testimony is a reimbursable cost of a legal proceeding pursuant to RC 4123.512F. In the courts below that had the conflict, the 8th District Court of Appeals and the 1st District Court of Appeals answered that question affirmatively, while the 11th District Court of Appeals in the Schuler case answered that question in the negative and said no. The difference in the Schuler case was that the Schuler decision relied on a prior decision of the 11th District Court of Appeals, in which it held that only enumerated costs under a statute can be reimbursed. We're here this morning on behalf of Mr. Schuler and all the other workers' compensation claimants to ask this court to answer the question in the affirmative for a number of reasons. And which are followed. Number one, the historical precedent of this court, going back to its 1985 decision in Moore versus General Motors, its 2001 decision in Kilgore versus Chrysler Corporation, and its 2002 decision of Cave versus Conrad. Additional reasons for answering the question in the affirmative is the liberal construction of the worker compensation statutes as mandated by Ohio Revised Code 412395 and case law. The legislative intent that this court has found in its previous rulings behind the workers' compensation statute, as well as 4123.512F. The general principles of statutory construction, and finally, certain policy concerns. And again, so that the court understands what I'm talking about, under the statute 4123.512, if an appellant or if a plaintiff such as Mr. Schuler wins in the trial court and a final decision, then he is entitled to certain costs of a legal proceeding. Those costs of a legal proceeding, which only go to a successful claimant, are found under the 512F paragraph. Going back to this court's decision in Moore versus General Motors, this court determined that an expert fee for his deposition is a cost of a legal proceeding. So we already have half of the answer that this court's looking at decided back by in 1985 by Moore. In other words, here we have an expert and it's the cost of his fees. We already know that if it goes in on a deposition, then that cost would be reimbursable as a cost of the legal proceedings.
And the state says that that's a way of saving money for the state, because if a doctor or an expert testifies at trial, there's obviously more cost than, or usually more cost than if an expert testifies by way of deposition. I don't find that in the statute any place, though.
Well, Your Honor, it's not in the statute. More importantly, or equally as importantly, it's not before the court. There is nothing in the record. It was never brought up at trial. It was never brought up in the Court of Appeals. And it was just broad brush statement, first of all, that something is more expensive than the other.
There's no regulation, I guess, that the Bureau of Workers' Compensation has adopted, the Industrial Commission has adopted, that says this, as far as we know, from the record.
That in regard to
that
cost
makes
being
a distinction, right?
No, Your Honor, and that's quite frankly the issue of whether something is more expensive or something is less expensive has nothing to do with the statutory construction of the phrase cost of a legal proceeding, where the Bureau of Workers' Compensation comes up with that issue is from this court's decision in the Akers versus serve a portion case, which was actually looking at not 512F, the cost of a legal proceedings issue, but the preceding paragraph, which talks about stenographic costs. And in that particular case, it gave a general legislative intent that we would rather have things done by deposition than done by medical evidence than done any other way. Now, quite frankly, Your Honor, workers' compensation matters have become highly adversarial any longer. In cases such as what was before the trial court in Shuler and in Dixon, which are cases involving pulmonary pneumoconiosis lung cases, okay, one of the things that happens every case that gets tried is when the medical experts on both sides, what they do is they get up and they bring their shadow box with them, and they stick the x-ray and they stick it into the shadow box. And they show the jury, here is where opacities are, which show that the scheduled occupational disease of asbestosis or silicosis is apparent. If we go back to the Akers court's request of just using a deposition, we can't do that. You are precluding the type of evidence that can be used. They then go on, the Bureau also goes on to talk about, well, maybe we can use a videotape versus maybe we can use the deposition. Again, we're talking about the definition of the term cost of a legal proceeding, not the mechanism which testimony comes in. Now, we already know that it could come in on a deposition because this court's already so ruled. We already know that what can also be a cost of a legal proceeding is the travel expenses of an attorney going to the deposition. That's the Kilgore versus Chrysler Motor case. We also know, under Kay versus Conrad, that the videographer's fee is permissible. What I don't want to be caught up with, Your Honors, is being precluded on how I want to present evidence to a jury based upon a statutory construction argument of what a cost of a legal proceeding is.
Well, but to make sure we're clear, nothing prevents you from admitting that testimony. It's a question of whether you get reimbursed for it.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. Yeah, okay. But pragmatically speaking, let's talk realistically
speaking. Well, I know the
economic
argument is that
if I can't get cost reimbursed for a particular way of doing it, right, I can't do it, specifically because, for example, attorney's fees are capped at $2,500 max for the case. And that means in this particular case, all the discovery, the trial court work, the Court of Appeals, because the Bureau also took up the decision of the jury to the Court of Appeals, which again affirmed the jury verdict also. So at the end of the day, whether this $2,500 covers the cost of all that or not isn't as important as if I have to make the decision as to how I present evidence on a purely economic sense, I won't take the case. There will be a chilling effect on workers' compensation claimants because either Mr. Shuler, who did not receive a penny when he won his trial, all he did was receive the right to participate in the workers' compensation. He doesn't get a penny on it. Either he has to pay the costs or I have to pay the costs, and if I pay the costs, it would be more than what I would be statutorily permitted, and on either case, myself or any other attorney in the same manner, and not just asbestos cases, but in workers' compensation cases across the board, they're going to say, why would I want to bring this case when we're going to lose money? Or Mr. Shuler's going to say, are you telling me that if I win and I get to participate, I still have to pay more money than I'm ever going to get?
Well, Mr. Wilson, you've already got the right to have cost reimbursed for a videotaped deposition.
That's
right?
Correct.
Which can be shown at a trial proceeding.
That's
right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So the difference is a live presentation or a pre-recorded presentation.
That's one of the differences. That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, in your shadow box example that you gave us earlier, that could be done on a videotaped deposition, could it not?
And Your Honor, that's actually a good point, and let me explain
why
it cannot. And it cannot be done as well as. And as well as makes a difference when we're talking about looking at an X-ray on a shadow box. Perfect example, Your Honor. You take an X-ray and you put it up on the shadow box, and the way they do it in the courts that we're involved
with. Oh, I've seen it done.
We're very close to the jury. The jury looks at it, and these are shades of gray. They're not black and white issues. They are literally, both figuratively and literally, shades of gray, in which the expert shows the jury, well, here, I want to put it here. The other thing that the expert does is that he puts up the standard put out by NIOSH that he compares it against to say whether the disease exists or not. So he has, first of all, he shows the jury this.
My only point is, what can be done live in the courtroom could be done and pre-recorded on a video, which is a already approved reimbursable cost.
Am I not right? Your Honor, if I could finish, I could tell you why it isn't. And my point is very simple. When you take the video and you have the videographer looking at it, at the shadow box, and then you take that video and you put it on a screen, which has to be big enough for everyone to see, those shades of gray go away. We're not talking plasma screen TVs here, okay? You can't get the same effect. And you also can't get the same effect because the videographer has to look at whether or not I'm looking at this part of the...
Well, Counselor, you're not asking the jury to make a decision about the X-ray on the shadow box. They don't have to look at that and come to a conclusion based on the absolute X-ray.
No, Your Honor, but what it does, it comes down to credibility issues. Because they look at it and they say, well, do I believe what he says about this picture or do I not? And that credibility issue is very important in regard to whether or not the right to participate, because we have two experts, one says yes, one says no. And it all comes down to the credibility. If Your Honor, if I may, unless the court has questions, reserve my time.
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Bry.
Ms. Bry, in this case, the trial court ordered the $750 for the deposition testimony to be paid, but totally denied the $3,000 for the live expert, correct?
That's correct, for a different expert.
Correct, for a different expert. Should the court at least not have awarded the comparable costs of what would have been the cost for a deposition? In other words, something? I mean, if we take the position that the video deposition has already been approved by our prior case law, then it seems to me that at least that amount should have been allowed out of the $3,000, and then we have the additional question today of whether they have the discretion to go to a live versus a video.
Well, Your Honor, the court's prior cases certainly do recognize that somebody can be reimbursed for their expert's deposition fee. And while it would be one approach to say that the amount, if you could actually determine if it would be the same amount, could be approved, our position is, the better view is that the court would say that the cost of legal proceedings is tied to the cost of producing medical testimony by deposition rather than that, as both the costs.
But if we rule that the plaintiff or the claimant would be at least entitled to the value of the testimony had it been done on video form, then we at least leave them, their counsel, the choice of whether you want to take that extra quality step of going live and bearing the risk of the cost versus going with the video. But to go all or nothing seems to be a rather unfair balance struck.
Well, the advantage of having a clear rule that's tied to the deposition testimony is that everybody knows up front that the video deposition fee will be paid.
And if you say the equivalent, that's also a clear rule, is it not?
It's a clear rule if you can determine what it is. And for example, our second proposition of law in the alternative, if the court were not to accept our first proposition of law, would be that at a minimum, the trial court should be evaluating the reasonableness of the expert's fee that's presented in the case and a fee that, for example, is larger than what it would be if the expert testified by deposition ought not to be approved as reasonable. And that would be consistent, I think, with what Your Honor is suggesting as an alternative.
Well, Counselor, it seems to me that there is really a very strong degree of unfairness here in the kind of hamstringing the plaintiffs in these areas because of this, I think, somewhat arbitrary rule with regards, at least it appears that way. And if there is an understanding that the fees are subject to a reasonableness determination, doesn't that satisfy the concerns?
Your Honor, it goes to some of the concerns, but let me clarify a point, if I may. I want to make sure I didn't misunderstand your question. The rule that we're seeking in our first proposition of law would not preclude a claimant from bringing somebody live. They would be in the same position then as
well,
the Bureau.
Practically
the
speaking, the economics of the situation precludes.
It would certainly encourage them to bring it by deposition, yes, because that would be reimbursable if they prevail. So that would be correct, but they certainly are able to do it in the ordinary civil case now. Most people bring their medical experts by deposition rather than live in court. And the reason for that is, I imagine, to save cost and to save court time in presenting the testimony.
Well, also the ease to get the cooperation of the expert. Is a huge concern here. If your expert is a physician, a medical expert, they have other patients to attend to, and it's just an ease of process.
That's certainly one of the purposes behind it, Your Honor, and I would certainly agree that we want to encourage doctors to be seeing patients rather than traveling to court and waiting around in court to testify.
Well, counsel, it's basically hard, extremely hard, to get a doctor to appear live in court. And it would seem to me it would be just the other way around, that when they are willing to do that, it probably is because they have enormous concern and empathy for a particular patient's problem, and they understand that live testimony is, if not universally, almost universally, more compelling to a jury than videotaped testimony. Certainly, in the case of a physician, that's going to be more compelling.
Well, Your Honor, a couple of responses to that. One, I think it's fair to say that the substance of the expert's testimony is going to be the same whether he testifies live or whether he testifies by deposition. That is to say, the diagnosis and the medical opinion will be the same either way. Part of the concern about allowing a rule that permits reimbursement for live testimony of medical experts under this statute is that essentially what you may be paying for is the cost of the expert's travel time to court and waiting at court, and that can result in a higher bill for the whole system. But it's important to remember that the baseline in the ordinary civil case is one where parties pay all of their own expenses. That's admittedly different in workers' compensation, where, for example, an injured worker who prevails can have his expert's deposition fee paid, as well as some other things. But paying for an expert's fee for going to court to testify, the Bureau's position is that that would undermine the statutory policy already recognized by this court in Acres of encouraging medical testimony by deposition.
In your experience, does it happen very often that doctors actually are willing to do live testimony?
Some may not be. My understanding is most testimony by the Bureau and the employer presented by video deposition at this point in time. We certainly want to keep the incentives in line with having doctors treat their patients and spend their time that way rather than having perhaps an incentive for them to go to court to testify.
So that's the policy behind your argument?
that's one of them. Certainly, the policy that the court recognized of encouraging the production of testimony by deposition, it is a cost savings to the system, but it also allows for a smoother trial court procedure in these cases. When you have a video deposition, the court can rule on the objections out of the hearing of the jury. You don't have doctors waiting around or having to be taken out of order to present their testimony. There are many advantages to that. And the statute...
Well, I'd be surprised to find any litigator who says, you know, if I can have a live witness or have that witness there on video, I would choose video over live any day of the week. I doubt if you'd find any litigator that would say that.
I haven't, to answer Your Honor's question, I haven't conducted a study of that, but my understanding is that in most of the civil cases where you have medical testimony, for the medical testimony, you do have that by video deposition just because it's easier, perhaps less costly.
Isn't your stronger argument that our cases seem to say that costs are not the same as expenses, and that your argument, I thought your brief was, as I read it, was that these are really expenses, that a doctor, paying a doctor to testify live at trial is an expense, not a cost. I haven't heard you argue that. We think we've taken you off onto the factual issues. What's your strongest argument on that issue?
We do believe that costs in this statute is still different than litigation-related expenses, as Your Honor suggests. In the ordinary civil case, cost is a very narrow term, which relates to filing fees and some other things. Admittedly, in this area and under this statute, 512F, it's a little broader than that. But to go a little broader than that and take us a few steps away from the American rule where parties pay their own litigation expenses is not the same as saying that the loser pays all expenses. And our concern here is that the position Mr. Shuler takes would take us another step down the slope toward the loser pays all litigation expenses in workers' comp cases. And as Your Honor suggests, this court's cases haven't gone that far, and the statute doesn't admit of that construction, particularly because it also limits or caps, I should say, the attorney fee that's recoverable under the cost of the legal proceeding statute. So whatever that term means, it certainly means a little more than costs, at least as this court has held in the Moore case, costs in the ordinary civil case, but that doesn't turn it around and mean that it pays for all litigation expenses of a claimant.
If we were to adopt Mr. Wilson's argument, would we have to overrule any of our cases?
Let me think about that. I don't know that you would necessarily need to overrule a case, but it would be somewhat inconsistent with, for example, what you've done to date. In the Akers case, you've recognized that that's an important policy of the statute, is encouraging the production of medical testimony by deposition. To construe this section in a way that would create an incentive for live testimony seems to be at odds with that. It also would be inconsistent with Kilgore and Cave and Moore, all of which related to the costs pertaining to medical expert depositions in some fashion, whether it's the expert's fee for testifying by deposition, an attorney's expense in traveling for an out-of-state expert, or the cost of the videographer. Those
were
all nevertheless.
Well, Counselor, if a cap was just utilized, like the cap for attorney fees or the cap for the $750 for the deposition, there's a cap for live testimony. How does that differ in the fee versus cost argument? Or expense versus cost, excuse me.
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question.
Well, if you're saying that the physician's fee is not a cost, okay?
Correct.
And I guess you're saying that because of all the variables attendant with live testimony. Yet a deposition is a cost that we have found to be reimbursable.
Yes, this court has found that to be part of costs under this particular statute.
Exactly.
That's
and
right.
There's a certain attractiveness to a cap that would kind of solve the problem here. And then it would be up to plaintiffs and their counsel of the cost versus the benefit of live testimony versus a deposition.
Well, if, certainly if the General Assembly amended this particular statute and specifically put in their expert fee up to a certain amount, as they did with the attorney's fees, that would give people a very clear indication. They haven't done that at this time, and certainly in 1959, when these provisions came into the statute, I don't know that the General Assembly was contemplating all the technology we have here and video depositions and so forth. But this statute, unfortunately, does not give us that particular guidance, and we think that the way to construe the statute is to be consistent with what the court has said in Acres. We've already said that the purpose is to encourage medical expert testimony by deposition, but by paying for the claimant's expert to come to court to testify, we'd be moving away from that purpose and also moving away from the particular expenses that the court has allowed under this statute in the Kilgore, Cave, and Moore decisions, all of which are can be construed consistently with Acres in the sense that they all related to the cost of the medical expert deposition. And to adopt the rule that Mr. Shuler requests here, we believe would create a loser pays everything system for the loser in the workers' comp cases, and that is inconsistent with 512F, also with the court's decisions in Acres, Moore, and the others. And alternatively, as I indicated before, should the court accept Mr. Shuler's proposition, we do urge the court to hold that the reasonableness of any expert fee, both in regard to the need for the testimony and the reasonableness of the particular fee, should be evaluated carefully, and that any fee that would be greater than a fee for the expert's deposition would not be a reasonable expert fee to be allowed. If the court has no further questions, I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bry. Mr. Wilson, you've saved 3.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. We're not going to a loser pays all expenses mode, Your Honor, by allowing this question to be answered in the affirmative, because under this court's decision in Moore, reiterated in Kilgore, reiterated a third time in 2002 in Cave, what we're talking about is reasonable litigation expenses connected with the preparation and presentation of an appeal. The reasonableness is what the trial court does as the gatekeeper. He can say, Your Honor, or he can say, you know, Mr. Wilson, you don't need that witness because it was redundant. You put him on at your own risk. He can say, I'm not going to give travel time because that's not reasonable. This is already there. That takes care of the cap issue because it's already there and this court's already held it. Another question that comes up is we keep talking about, I heard the Bureau talk about, you know, these are the doctors. Okay. The issue before the court is not talking about the expense of a treating physician. It is talking about the expense of an expert, whether it be a physician, whether it be a PhD, anything in connection with workers' compensation. So when this court is issuing its determination to answer affirmatively or negatively, it has to take into consideration that what we're talking about is all types of experts. Another question that came up that causes me trouble as a trial lawyer is the issue of, is the substance of an expert testimony the same whether it's live or video? No, it isn't. And each of the courts here, the justices here, as they sat through trials on, and anyway, know that if I have a videotaped deposition in the can before I go to trial, I go up and play it, based upon whatever hypothesis or I put before it. When I actually bring my expert in live, he can change and he can discuss the issues that are actually come up as evidence, whether they be good or whether they be bad. That is not the same to have him as video because his testimony is locked in, no matter how the rest of the evidence comes out at all. And last but not least, I have also a problem with the issue of why the mechanism, deposition, video, or live, makes a determination as to the definition of cost of a legal proceeding. Because the expert's test, it's the fee itself for the testimony that is the cost of the legal proceeding, whether it comes in any one of the three mechanisms. To put the mechanism down as the requirement for a determination of the term cost of a legal proceeding, I think would be rewriting the statute.
Well, but we have a fair amount of law, don't we, that says that costs are discrete from expenses, and some items are expenses, some are costs, and that if you want to call it cost and expense, we look for a statute, and here we have a statute specifically saying authorizing the payment for depositions. Isn't that the hurdle you have to get over with our previous cases?
I believe that's part of it, and I have to somehow explain to my client, well, one doctor's testimony gets paid and the other one doesn't. Same case, same type of issues. Your Honor, I would just ask the court would affirm, would answer the question in the affirmative, and to make the live testimony of an expert be a cost of a legal proceedings pursuant to 4123.512F, and thank you, Your Honors,
thank
for
you.
Your patience.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.